Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Welcome everyone to Rock That Relationship. Today we are talking about how to support your partner through challenges and changes. You know, many different things come up for us in life, and you know, to be that partner, what are we doing to help support them as they're dealing with some of these difficulties? And it may be something that we're both dealing with at the same time, but you know, particularly the partner might be struggling a little bit more, having more, you know, demands or responsibilities, or just having a challenging situation arising in some area of their life, and you're along for the ride. Or maybe you're the one who needs the support at a certain time, and you're looking to your partner to provide support. And so we're going to have a chance to talk today a little bit about what are those kinds of issues that come up often in relationships where people need the support, and what are some things that we have seen from our crowdsourcing on Facebook from some of our listeners as to what you can do to help be supportive, and what are the things to maybe stay away from. So Tracy, we're on again for another awesome conversation. And this is, you know, this is a big one because, you know, as we talk about providing support, this is part of what, you know, being in a relationship is all about. So let's talk a little bit about what we saw when we posted on Facebook about what kind of issues people have faced that they've needed the most support. What are the things that came up, you know, that you've noticed?
I think people's, you know, biggest things were the bigger things like job loss, death, either death of a child, death of a, you know, or having a miscarriage or death of an actual child, or like a person getting ill within the relationship, an ill parent. I've seen that a lot, stuff like that. And then, I mean, I think just a general day-to-day, there are some people who just struggle more in life, right? And they find it harder to get things done.
Right. Well, and I know there was a lively discussion on my Facebook page about menopause, right, and support. And, you know, particularly you and I being in, you know, being in relationships with women, we're looking at double that, right, like two menopause going through at different times, you know, in other relationship dynamics where maybe one person eventually goes through menopause or neither go through, that might not be, you know, as, you know, salient. But menopause.
Well, wait, I want to make a point for the listeners. So menopause is actually the greatest thing ever. I'm actually loving it. It's perimenopause that is the nightmare for everybody. That's when the years and years of somebody being like, you know, Jekyll and Hyde. And it's really not within a person's control, right? And that was the point that one of our mutual friends had made on Facebook, is that understanding, especially if you're in a woman-woman relationship, that you're going to have those swings, right? And that to understand when that's happening. And it's very, I mean, as every person who's ever had, you know, PMS knows, this is, you don't realize you're in it until it's like already occurred. And then like, oh, that makes sense why I was so awful, you know? And so to actually get that. And so it's interesting because menopause for me has actually made me a much calmer, nicer person. I don't have swings like I used to. I mean, I used to have insane swings, and I never took hormones or anything like that. So it's actually the perimenopause, usually in the person's 40s, that are the danger times.
Interesting. Well, you know, yeah. I haven't hit those yet, but I do understand that can be, it can be distressing or confusing, you know, if partners aren't going through it at the same time and can empathize. Mm-hmm. So one will eventually go through it before another. And, you know, maybe by the time the second person goes through, the first person's like, yeah, I completely understand, I've been there. But if the other way around, you're like, what is happening? I mean, and I think that
it matters if people are taking hormones also or birth control, because then they actually don't go through it. They don't have those wild swings in the same way that a person who doesn't. But also to remember that not everybody's experience going through it is the same, right? Like, right. It's so different. It might be very easy for you. You don't seem to have these mood swings. So I haven't seen them, you know,
but not yet. So, I mean, I guess we'll see. You know, but I mean, that was a really interesting and lively conversation that I'm not sure that I was expecting to come up on Facebook. But we did see some, we saw another one that I thought was really interesting around weight loss. And someone who had talked about that they had lost a lot of weight and they had some sense of shame for the way that they had been before and kind of carrying that shame and trying to figure out how to deal with it and needed their partner to be supportive while they kind of processed through that shaming, that self-shaming, and that it was hard for the partner to kind of understand, because you can think about a partner might be like, oh, well, you lost weight, it's great. But really kind of dealing with the emotions that come up with that was something that was really salient for someone, didn't even think about it. And the fact that I didn't even necessarily think about that is part and parcel of the idea that, you know, there might be something that is really, really, you know, a difficulty or someone is struggling with in a relationship and the other person just has no idea that that's something that's happening.
That's why communication and talking about everything's so good. But also, I think if you're talking about weight loss, maybe the person wasn't bothered by their weight in the first place, but then when they've lost the weight, it might become a more emotional issue. Like, oh, was that weight like keeping me from doing a lot of the things I wanted to do? Or looking back, I know if I look back at photos, even when I was a cop, I have people come over and they're like, oh, look at your old cop picture. You were so much heavier. And I'm like, I wasn't heavier. I was like lifting a lot of weight. And I was, you know, I was just as fit as I am now. I just look different. Right now I've turned into a scrawny little bird because I'm aging, right? So I'm losing muscle mass and I do make some attempts to keep it up, but that's also something like during your 40s and then getting to your 50s is weight gain. I'm going the opposite way because that's my family genetics, is to lose weight and to just shrink down. But that freaks me out too, right? Like I'm shrinking as a person. Like I'm becoming actually smaller and smaller.
Well, and again, any of these particular things that are happening, we're going through, we have partners that are alongside that sometimes don't know how to best support us because either they're not experiencing it, it doesn't seem valid, it seems like, you know, it's not even like that big of a deal, or like, what do you mean, Tracy? That's great, you know, that you seem really fit. Like, why would you be thinking about that? Where you're thinking like more emotionally, like I am literally shrinking as a human being. And so I think all of these issues that have come up are all these ideas that whatever you're struggling with, whatever you're suffering from, whatever challenge you're facing, it's legitimate. Right. And the idea is, how can your partner best support you?
By validating your emotions and your
there's
feelings
a lot of things
around it, right?
Exactly. And we're going to get to talk about a lot of those things. So let me ask you, let me just kind of start off though. You know, we've talked about like pretty much a bunch of issues came up, which was really, really great and helped us think a little bit differently. But can you think of a time when you were going through a really challenging time? Maybe it was something difficult with a job or the loss of someone in your life or something, some particular situation, not kind of an ongoing thing, in which you needed support from a partner. Like you were like, it was a real struggle time and you needed a support from a partner. Do you have an experience like that, that you, where a partner showed up for you and supported you through that?
Probably. I mean, mostly my life, so like more ongoing and things that I didn't even recognize, which led to a lot of my behavioral issues. But when I was a police officer, it was a very stressful job, right? And it wasn't the job itself, like going out with the citizens, or I don't, you know, mind danger and all that. It was the police culture that I did not click well with. And so my struggle was, I loved the job, but I didn't love the culture. And so I always felt that I was in the wrong place. And so I did need someone to understand that, and also to understand my life, right? So when you're a cop, your life is quite different. Like, you know, you're working nights or you're doing crazy stuff and you come home and talk about crazy stuff. I happened to be with somebody who was a nurse and a sexual assault nurse examiner. So we had very similar stuff to talk about. Whereas, you know, I think people that's very hard. It was very hard to even have friends who couldn't understand like what I was seeing every night, you know, and going through. And that came out years later. Like the stuff that I would talk about was kind of shocking to people. The things that I thought were like a normal everyday conversation. But I've never, like, I've always been kind of very independent. I'll deal with my own stuff, right? Now, did I take out when I was annoyed and frustrated on others? Yes, like by being a jerk. Yes. But you know, I got fired a couple months ago, and I am in a relationship when that happened. And I do think because I'm past like a lot of that hormonal stuff that I am, you know, well into menopause, I have such a different view on it. I'm so emotional, but I do expect the person to understand or be able to talk about it or like, I hate to say assist me because I don't need assistance in like getting a job or anything like that, but in understanding like what happened. I think it'd be really hard. And I saw this with my own family growing up. My, you know, father lost his job, and that was extremely difficult for my parents because he went on strike and he was fired in a mass firing back in the 80s. And my mother, you know, was freaked out because they had three kids to take care of, and it caused so much stress and tension. You know, it caused a lot of terrible things to happen. So I think that we talked about it with a guest. You really have to be a unit. You have to decide we're a unit and we're going to support each other, you know, no matter what happens. I don't think most people are intentionally trying to be lazy or, you know, lose their job or whatever. The other partner needs to be understanding, I think, when there's big life changes like that. And that's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. Because,
no.
You know, your whole security, if somebody loses their job, then you're freaked out about money. Money runs everything. People are nervous about, you know, are they going to lose their house or whatever? And I grew up where we lost everything. We lost our house, our cars, and all of that. And so for me, I'm like, whatever. Okay, lose it. I don't care. So I don't stress about that stuff. But I think the vast majority of people, especially planners, that's something really stressful. Or they look at the person who doesn't have the job as if there's something wrong with them.
Right.
Which compounds the problem, right?
So when you're talking about a time that you needed support from a partner, it's more like an ongoing support for your life.
Right.
Okay. And that's important because you're working in a kind of a profession that could be jarring or difficult to understand if you were sort of outside of that purview. And by being with someone who kind of was adjacent to what you did and saw her own sense of, you know,
right.
all sorts
Awful
of emergencies
things, right.
And things that she could relate, and that just the ability to relate to you gave you a sense of support. And,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's important to be in similar jobs. So I was with an ER nurse and who also did the sexual assault nurse examiner stuff, and our neighbors were architects. So they were two lesbians who were architects in a couple, and we would go over to their house for game night or whatever. And when we would start talking about work, the looks on their faces would just, they didn't know how to deal with what we were talking about. And then they chose the picture of a doorway, or we went on this vacation and saw archway, you know, and it's like, God, we're just looking at the world in such different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I could be in a relationship with someone who really didn't understand that stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes
you know?
Sense. Well, and part of that is the showing up by just simply understanding your worldview,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, I mean, for me, mine is less of that, although, you know, that's helpful because some things that are more dire or more stressful in my occupation, in fact, are things that if someone who's sort of in a related field or does some of the same kinds of things that I do could better understand. I've been with people who have like an academic background since the beginning of time. And so every one of them understands the stakes of when I get back a journal article that I've submitted that has reviewer feedback that's very confusing and I'm stressed out about it. And they understand because they have submitted papers and had reviewer feedback that's very confusing. And so even though it's not like seeing what you're seeing as a cop, it's the same kind of thing. Like as someone outside of that would be like, who cares? Just disregard their stupid feedback.
Well, a cop would look at you and be like, who cares?
Who cares?
No stakes to that, right? So I
right.
do think it's important. It doesn't matter who you are, what you're doing, but you being an academic, it's more comfortable for you to be with an academic who understands. You don't have to explain anything. It's more comfortable
right.
for a cop to be with either a nurse or somebody who, or another cop who gets what they're going through. And you don't have to explain. Same as being a lawyer, just even to explain the basics of the law stuff. So annoying.
Being a kindergarten
right?
teacher and
right.
trying to explain child development. I mean,
right.
But the reality is that most couples, or at least a lot of couples, aren't necessarily in the same occupational field. So I think that the moral of the story in some of this is that, you know, this idea is this taking time to either understand what the other person does or at least just saying that's obviously stressful for them. It doesn't have to be stressful for you compared to your
right.
life. It's not your life. If they are stressed out about it, if they are hurting, if they are sad, that is justified. It is justified 100%. And there's no reason that a partner should ever question that. That's what I think. It was interesting. Like my mother died about a year and a half ago, which, as you know, everybody knows, and I've talked about it on the show too, was literally the most devastating thing that has ever happened in my entire life. Like the breath was just knocked out of me. I've lost very important people in my life, very significant people in my life, including my father and my grandfather, basically my stepfather. I've had horrible, awful experiences, and I will tell you that nothing has ever hurt that bad. I had a lot of people trying to console me in various ways, right? But, you know, and I heard it all the different things. We'll talk about that under the do's and the don'ts. But I will tell you that I didn't know what I needed at the time. And I think this is a really important thing. So, like, the question is, when was the time that you needed support? I needed something, but I had never felt that devastated in my life. So it was like what I needed today was different than what I needed yesterday, and it'll be different than what I need tomorrow. Sometimes I just needed, like, you know, someone to talk to. Like, I remember, you know, when all this was happening, my mother was in the hospital and it wasn't looking very good. You know, and you had said, "What can I do?" And I said, I was up in Phoenix, and I said, "Just drive 2 hours up here and go on a walk with me." That's what I needed. I didn't need anything else. And right. It was really interesting how people showed up for me. I remember one of my friends, you know, was like, I'll stay up and I'll watch your cat, and took care of my cat for, like, I was gone for almost a month. And one friend came in and stocked my fridge full of food so I didn't have to go shopping. And it was so interesting, all the kinds of things that I didn't know that I would need, and I did. But the most profound thing, obviously, was that I just needed the presence of someone to hold my hand, and my partner was there, like, every single moment of every single day. I mean, completely uprooted her life, and we were in a new relationship. So it was like, really, it was a lot to ask, and she never even questioned it, and was there for me through the entire thing. And mostly it was just so that I could cry. And I wasn't by myself doing it. And so it was really interesting. So sometimes I just didn't know what I needed, and what I needed was different from everyone. What I needed was just a walk with me.
And what you needed is somebody to be responsive, right?
Yeah. Just show me that you care. Right. Like I didn't know that I was going to need a stocked fridge, but I was so grateful to that friend for providing all this food. When I came back, I was like, oh my gosh,
right,
this is so great. And it was just so caring. And so it's, you know, it's interesting when we don't even know what we need, and other people just, you know, you don't want to assume what people need, but just kind of thinking, well, everybody's going to want food. So, you know, and I asked you outright, like, will you come and walk with me? And then I know we walked in this place and you're like, this is the ugliest place I've ever walked in. Trust me, there are uglier places, believe it or not.
That's not the only thing I said on that walk, but no, that was a gross walk.
Exactly.
Disgusting.
Nasty.
It was the end of August.
Let's flip this around on its head, though, the other way. Like, as we think about how we show up for others, can you think of a time in which your partner, whoever you were with at the time, needed some kind of support from you because they were going through something, and then how you showed up for them? Is it like, what worked, and then what could you might have done better or differently?
Well, one of my partner's, you know, parents died, and it was her second parent, so her father, her mother had died earlier, and I had to go down. I mean, she had to go, you know, hours away to see him before he was sick. And it was a very complicated relationship, but taking care of the kids, you know, and doing all that stuff at the home. So, like, go and be, you don't have to worry about anything here. And then I went and just, you know, took care of the house down there. And then I was down there for like 3 days or something dealing with that house, and then managing stuff at the attorney's office and stuff like that. And so I think that was super helpful for her. And I mean, I think now it's just, I've been very pushy in the past, or like, you know, I was raised in the school of hard knocks. So more like, okay, let's go. Mm-hmm. People die, let's move on, that kind of stuff. Like, always very good about getting this stuff done, but I'm much better now about just, you know, validating feelings and also not pushing. You know, I think like you really just have to listen to that person and see, you know, what they want from you. And I don't think it's wrong to ask, you know, a person and to say, well, what do you need from me? But then you have to respect that, you know? And I don't think it's fair if you're the person suffering to expect the other person to like be a mind reader and know what you want. Like, you know, a person could say like, I don't know what I want. I just am like, I'm so upset or I'm so this or that, or I just want you to be around. I mean, it is very hard. I did see that your partner was able to support you through that. And I don't think many people, I mean, we're now in the world of, you know, you can work, you know, remotely or whatever, but that's not always possible for people. It's really hard. And I think that you have to, both parties, no matter which situation they're in, have to look and see, is that person doing their best and they're doing what they can to help you? Might not be exactly what you need, but maybe you need to get that from somebody else, right? Like, they're trying, they're doing their best. And that's the thing about life and death and all these things. And I deal with a lot of death stuff because I was a cop and I am an attorney, that life goes on, you know, like we have to keep living. We're the living ones. And so if the person's being kind and helpful and doing what they can, I think we have to give them again that like understanding. But people are more limited in their, I mean, I was a much more limited person in my emotional range of what I could offer someone, you know?
Right.
And when I was with another more equally limited person, it was pretty much okay, right? But then you get with someone who has more range, emotional range and needs and stuff, it's harder to meet that. And then I don't think they necessarily need to stay in that relationship. Again, you got to be similar, just like you need to have similar jobs or similar understanding. You have to have similar emotional ranges, you know, because that really is, it makes a big difference to be with someone who's emotionally incapable versus somebody who's emotionally capable of dealing with, you know, the day to day, the bigger things and your own relationship stuff. You know, you have to be with someone similar. I mean,
or you have to be okay with the difference and accept and appreciate the difference. Like that's the other thing. Cause I mean, there's some people who have a higher emotional range than others, but you know, they find some common ground, but I see what you're saying is, you know, at least being aware of what you are capable of offering, and what the other person is capable of asking for, because sometimes we also don't articulate what we need, right? Like I said before, with my mom's death, I didn't know what I needed. Sometimes we know what we need and we just don't say it. And then you're right. We expect another person to be a mind reader. You know, like when I think back about how I've helped other people when they, you know, other partners when they needed support, is I can't think of any one particular like event that happened, but you know, I am a fixer. You know, I don't like it when things are in disarray. I don't like it when a cabinet is open or a problem is unsolved. And so what I do is if someone expresses that they are struggling with something, my immediate intention is to fix it. I go to the source and fix it, or I empower them to fix it, or, you know, any number of different things, or I actually jump in and fix it. And so,
well, but let's say like you have a kid now, right? And then let's say you're with a partner who had a sick parent who's on the East Coast and you're in Arizona, or, you know, the West Coast or just farther away. Like as the partner with the sick parent or whatever I need to, I wouldn't expect you to drop your life. And I have a real issue about that, you know, like if you can, or if you want to, that's one thing. But I also think like you have to take into consideration what the other person has going on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. But for me, I just wanted the problem to go away altogether. You know, like if I could fix it, you wouldn't have to cope. If I could come up with some kind of solution so that, you know, your sick parent, you know, you could go spend time with your sick parent. Maybe we could fly your sick parent out here. We've got really good doctors, right? Like I would try to come up with some type of an alternative or a solution, which in an effort to be helpful was oftentimes undermining to the other person. And so that was just my way of saying, like, I think we can think of a really cool solution that will work for everybody. And you know, and while that's actually really helpful, like in the leadership world, that's a really great approach. When you're selling
what's
widgets,
wrong with that?
Yeah, when you're selling widgets, but when you have someone who's got the emotional, you know, investment in the fact that they might have a sick parent who's living in their childhood, the home that they grew up in, right? The childhood home. And they know that if that parent moves out here, they'd have to sell the home. There's just a lot of like details and things that I can't put myself into, that when I make a, you know, a suggestion, that would be unwarranted. And so, you know, maybe that's a point too, when we talk about asking what they need, is really saying like, you know, Do you, are, is this the solution that you're going with, or is this the route you're going to take, or are you still brainstorming other things you can do? And if you, and then if they say, no, I'm still trying to think of ways to do this, then say, do you want me to help do that with you? Rather than just saying, I think that we should just move your mom out here.
Right.
Because that seems really insensitive to so many other things that are underneath that, in an effort to almost look selfish too. And mm-hmm. it's not, it's just trying to be like mutually accommodating.
Well, right. Helping everybody.
Right. Helping right. everybody. Exactly. So, well, let's, you know, we're sort of getting into this. Let's talk a little bit about the don'ts per se of don'ts of what to do. This is a big one. When we looked at our Facebook responses and then just kind of generally some of these ideas about what not to do. So your partner has some kind of issue that's coming up. Or that happened, and maybe it's not like as serious as like a death or an illness, but maybe it's like a difficulty at work or a troubling boss or something. The idea that we would minimize it, right? Somehow, because we want to make them feel better. Like it's not really that big of a deal. So like it shouldn't take up that much of your worry space. And so because I'm telling you that, maybe you can let a little bit of it go and not let it bother you as much. So the intention is good, but the mm-hmm. impact is like, it's not that big of a deal. So you come off as though you know better.
Right.
And that you don't want to hear what they have to say because you don't think it's warrants even the conversation.
Right.
And you're being judgmental.
Right.
I've found myself trying to say that in an effort to make someone feel like it's not the stakes aren't as high as they're making them, so that maybe mm-hmm. they can let a little bit of it go.
Like calm down about it.
Yeah. So it's not so
troubling.
But
that's how it's received. Like basically, you're basically saying calm down about it. Right.
That is the worst thing you can say to someone. I don't know why people say that. You just need to calm down. Oh, okay. Well, thank you. I'm going to take a breath and calm down, person who told me that.
I mean, there are ways to do that nicely, but yeah, it's hard, but it's hard. All of these things are hard, right? I think, mm-hmm. again, it's like you either validate the other person's experience or you don't. But that's an art. Like, you have to learn how to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
well, and thinking about your intention versus your impact, right? Like, again, your intention might be very good mm-hmm. when you say something like it's not that big of a deal, but your impact is you're undermining the fact that they can judge what's a big deal or not, and you're telling them how they should feel. So taking a step back, because you're right, it's an art, and you have to think about, like, what are some of the things you can do? What about, like, comparing? I've had this happen to me. I've probably done it, you know, where something bad happens to someone, they tell you about it, particularly your partner, and you say, oh, when that happened to me, or I know how you feel. Good intention, right? Like, you want to relate to them. You're like, I'm right there with you. But you're not, but what you're saying is, I know how you feel, which is like, nah, you don't. Like, there were people who, like, their moms had died, and they told me, like, oh, I know how you feel. Well, we both had a mom die, but our relationships with our mothers were very different. Yours might, theirs might have been better, worse. I have no idea. But, you know, yeah, I guess we can relate in knowing what it's like to have a parent die and some of the logistical things and the feeling of loss. But you don't know how I feel. My mom was my very best friend. I talked to her every single day. Like that is just something that.
Well, I think that's. You know, that's the art of, like, how to communicate with other people, that everyone thinks their pet's the greatest. Everyone thinks their, you know, well, not everyone thinks their mom's the greatest. I can't even say that. It's serious. But, like, people who think that they have the greatest mother, they have the greatest father, the greatest pet, the greatest whatever, they're always going to bristle at that kind of phrasing, right? So I think there are certain things, like when we talked about, like, what not to say to people, or what do people not like when people say to them during the breakup? It's the same as during any time of crisis, right?
Yeah.
You should minimize. You should ask, do you want my help, or you just want me to be here for support? And never say, I understand how you feel, because you really don't. You don't know.
No.
Nobody, everyone's pain is different. I don't think you should ever compare either, because yeah. One can say, well, and I used to do this all the time. It's like, oh, well, you think that problem's bad. What do you think of people in, you know, Ethiopia, or what do you think right. is happening to people over yeah. there? And while in a global sense, I guess that's fair, it's not really fair to the person, right? So, like,
yeah.
each person's stress level or what they have to deal with or whatever is personal to them. And so mm-hmm. I don't think people do it to be mean at all.
No.
And they're in their own pain, right? But trying to compare it all rather than just listening to what the person has to say to describe their relationship with their mother and how this loss has affected them. Why you don't need to respond to anything other than I'm really sorry.
Exactly. Or, right.
You know, I hear
well,
what
because
you're
it
saying.
also shifts the focus. Like if I say I'm really sad about my mom today, and then someone who's like, oh, I know how you feel. When my mom died 23 years ago, I was really sad. And then they take up all the airspace. And all of a sudden, the conversation has shifted about being less supportive of you and trying to be more relating to you. And, you know, and some people might like that. I don't know that it's a good tactic. But yes, I would avoid the comparing. Let's move on to judging. So judging would be things like you are listening to respond, kind of crafting your response in your head, whether that's a comparing response, a minimizing response, whatever it is. You're just not fully engaged. Or even the more overt kind of way is like if you considered X point of view, maybe you could see that dot, dot, dot. Like I've seen this happen with someone who's like struggling at work, right, with like a coworker, and they're just really having a hard time getting along with this person. And they're talking to their partner, and their partner said, well, maybe if you considered their point of view, you could see that maybe you're not helping this relationship either. And, you know, while it's kind of maybe useful advice, it is entirely unsolicited and probably coming from your partner might not be timed very well in that moment. So I think of this kind of idea that, you know, there's never really a time when someone who's hurting said, wow, I wish that you were less compassionate and you just would have given me your critical opinion right now. You know, it just doesn't work well, like that.
No, it's hard. I used to do that a lot. And I would, you know, try to say like, this person, I mean, really, who knows what this person's thinking, or because that always used to bug me. Like now I'd just be like, well, I don't know what I'd be like now. I'm probably not very good at that.
Yeah,
because
that's
I,
what's
I
hard.
We don't really know what it really doesn't. I always just try to say, who knows what that person's going through, why they're being this way, you know, like it is difficult. I try to just listen more and then be sympathetic rather than be opinionated. And I think opinionated is comes off as judgmental. You know, I had a big fight with a former, you know, an ex a couple months ago about that. You know, she thought I was just being super judgmental, and she thought that everything that I said was like giving my opinion about how to fix it and all that. So ever since then, I've been much better about, okay, fine. You know, I just say things like, well, you know, if I were to deal with the situation, this is what I might do, versus like, you should do this or you should do that. I've kind of taken that out of my vocabulary. Even if you tell someone like, well, meaning you should go swimming or should do that, they get all bristled up like, what? I'll go when I want to go. I'll do what I want to do. But I think that that's the thing, is it's just our way of talking in the world. And like, especially if you've been in a job that you boss people around, it's hard to like, you know, take that down a notch when you're home or when you're with friends or family. But I think people who just learn to be better listeners, right? And so active listening versus, you know, sitting there waiting to respond or judge, I think for any situation, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then there's, you know, like this idea of people who say, you know, stuff like, well, there's nothing I can do to help you in this situation. You're obviously not taking my advice, or, you know, I don't understand why this is bothering you so much. And some of those kinds of things even also are just very, just kind of very judgy and off-putting. And so I'm not really a fan of the judgment. I don't really, if I'm upset about somebody treating me badly at work, I don't want to be encouraged to look at their point of view. I don't want to be encouraged to think about what they're going through. And if they had a bad day, I'm just upset that I was treated badly. I just want you to listen. And I want you to say that stinks. That must have felt awful to have that comment said about you in a meeting by your coworker. Okay, here's another one that people do. I've done this one before. Silver line. Like, here's a couple of them. And we've talked about this in the one on the breakup do's and don'ts, because this is so similar. And some of these were put in our Facebook post here, was time heals, right? Time heals, or this too shall pass, right? Somebody put in the post, it's God's will. Like, you know, when someone dies or something happens, it's God's will. Or the one that seems more benign than all of them, but still is very powerfully undermining, is at least it was your coworker who made that comment and not your boss.
That's so very annoying.
So do you silver line things, or do people
No,
do that
I
with
don't
you?
believe in that.
No.
I don't do that. But I do, I am a Buddhist. You can see the Buddha behind me. But it looks like a demon face. But if you were here, you'd see
Oh.
it's more peaceful looking in person. But
I thought you were talking about the llama. I was like, is that
no,
like
the
Buddhist
Buddha is
llama?
next to the llama.
I
But
see. Gotcha.
yeah, it doesn't look like that from where we're sitting on the Zoom. It's not that I don't like silver lining, and I do bristle at that. I also don't like when people say everything's going to be okay, because I'm like, how do you know that? You don't know
Right.
that. Are you a psychic? Like, you don't know that everything's going to be okay. Things could go horribly wrong, and then I'm
Yeah.
going to have to learn to deal with it, right? So I never ascribe to that way of thinking. I don't like it. And I think that, but I am a Buddhist, and so therefore I have a different view on death than a lot of people. And so it's not a very Western view. It's hard. Like, I don't know. I've said a lot of things to a lot of people who've had a lot of tragedy, and they seem to respond well to that, because my opinion is, if you recognize the sorrow that they're experiencing or the trauma that they've experienced, you're validating them. And then you can put in the larger context of, you know, this is the world that we live in. Like, the reality is we're all going to die. The reality is everyone dies. Everyone will die. And, you know, it may not be in the nicest way, you know, and it may, I mean, that's the thing. There's trauma versus like grief, right? We've talked about that in the context of a breakup, but the same for death, right? No one that I mean, most people don't want to die, and most people don't want the people around them to die, but we're all going to die. And like, I don't see it as, I mean, I think there's a continuation of life after this life. So for me, it's just not the same, but I wouldn't say it in a way that's like, well, at least that, you know, they died quickly. You know, if someone was killed in a tragic accident or something.
Right.
And that's the other thing, is like, you don't need to say any of that. None of that needs to be said.
No, it doesn't.
All
Well,
you
and
have to
the
say
other
is,
thing
I'm
is,
so sorry this happened.
you
You
don't
know?
Need to assume other people's like faith and religion either, because like I too believe that, you know, I believe in afterlife and all of these things and past lives and reincarnation, and that's my belief. And so it gives me peace and solace to think that like my mom, you know, she's in a better place and she'll maybe come back and blah, blah, blah. Right. But for someone to tell me that, or for me to say that to someone who might not believe in that, it might be jarring. So you're right. The idea is just not. And, you know, you think about your partner is, you know, understanding and recognizing what their beliefs are and maybe asking them, like, you know, it's okay. I mean, especially if it's a partner that you're really close to and you talk a lot about this, like if they experience a death, is saying, you know, what do you believe happens after death? I mean, having those kind of conversations where they talk through it. I mean, but again, I wouldn't do that with just anyone. I would do that only if it was like, it felt right with your partner who you know really well. But
And if you've already said the, like, I'm sorry stuff, right?
Exactly. So that, this isn't the first thing
right.
out of your mouth is like,
right.
You know, maybe your mom's like, you know, with, you know, I have like, maybe your mom's with your childhood dog now.
Right.
And like, and I'm like, well, no, she's probably with my dad and they got divorced. So I don't know what they were doing upstairs, but it seems like, again, all of these things, for the most part, unless you're just kind of being a jerk, they come from really good intention, because we see someone that we love hurting and we want to take away that hurt. And we think that we can do that by doing any of these things that minimizes it so that they don't feel so bad, or that makes it silver line it so that that they see that there's something positive. We do these things out of good intention because we love the person we're with, but thinking that partner is in a very unstable, unsettled, suffering state of whatever they're in, it's not their job to kind of sift through your words to find your intention. It's your job to think about what the impact will be of the words that you're going to say, and take a moment to just think about that.
Well, isn't that the case for like basically everything that we're doing?
I think so. It's a foundation for all relationships. It's even a foundation for talking to someone you're next to on an airplane. I mean, it's common kind of courtesy and communication. All right. There's one last one under the don'ts. And we talked a little bit about this, but fix, which is the unsolicited advice. Try to fix the person. Try to come up with all of the solutions. Like I said, I'm a huge fixer. I was. I actually went to therapy for like a year about how to stop trying to fix other people's problems.
Well, our astrologer said that you can't help it. That's how you are. Did you know that?
No,
Bethany
you
said
never
that
told
to
me
me.
that.
Yeah, she said you can't help it. That's how you are. You're like a Virgo, Virgo. That's your
I am.
thing. And if someone allows you to, that's what you're going to do. You're basically going to take over and do everything and fix everything. You can't help it. It's your
No, I mean, it's part of who I
astrological.
am. I'm just more aware of it now when it's not welcome that I back off. You know, but my go-to is offering assistance that seems very tangible and tactical. So like, you know, if you have to, you know, work on this work project tonight, I can't give you more time, but what I can do is cook dinner. And so it's not just an act of gratitude. It's like fixing the problem. I'm literally giving you back more time by fixing dinner and bringing it into your workspace or whatever. So,
which is nice. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, do you?
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with that because I'm not actually trying to tell them how to fix the problem. But if they say, I wish I had more time, I'd say, okay, well, let's do this. We normally eat together, you know, at the table for half an hour.
I can make this stuff so that then you do have more time.
Yeah, so it's their idea that they need more time.
Right.
Because they're stressed about a project that's due tomorrow. Like they say, I wish I had more time. And then I say, oh, how can I help? Here's some ways I might be able to help you with more time. So I've been trying to do fixing more like that than trying to get in and be like, you need to tell your boss that you don't, you know, and so I still do
Well,
that.
I think that that thing though, well, okay, you can do that, but you could say it in a way, well, if this was my problem or if I was in this situation, this is what I might do. I've found that from saying you should do this to, well, this is what I might do if I was in this kind of situation, totally changes the tenor. It completely changes how it's received, you know?
Well, and the thing is like that kind of a statement might be better when you're not in the middle of the crisis. So like saying, you know, a couple of weeks later, like, I know that you've been really stressed about work or, you know, about this coworker that's really bothering you and it's stressful, not in a moment in which they're very upset about the coworker, but just say, what kinds of things are you doing to, you know, is there, what kinds of things do you need or what have you been doing or, you know, whatever it is, like to maybe help resolve the situation. So, because it's hard for me to watch how hurt that you get in this situation. And I'm sure that it hurts for you. Is there, you know, and then that way you're not right in the middle of it.
Right.
Like they're not coming home and crying because their coworker said something mean to them. And then you're like, well, if I were in your shoes, I might, you know, at that point they just want to cry and be like upset.
Right.
So timing is part of it. Let's talk about some of the things that we can do. We talked about validating, right?
Validating always.
Yes.
I'm going like to write that down. Validate feelings.
Validate. Just like even just something like this must be really tough or it looks like it's really, you know, taking a toll on you or it's, you know, I'm sorry
that
this is
really
happening.
Hard. Right.
Yeah. That you're validating. Even if you
that
think
seems
it is
really
not
hard.
hard.
Is there any way I can help?
Exactly. And that's the ask part, right?
Or do you just want me to listen? Right.
Yeah. What do you need? What can I do to help? Is that, you know, and sometimes they say, I don't know. I've said that to people. I don't know what you can do right now, but I will let you know. And then they back off. And I really appreciate that. I don't need to be asked 400 times. What can I do to help? What can I do to help? What can I do? Like, I will tell you, but I really appreciate being asked once or twice, but then it's like, I will let you know, this is what I need. Then there we talk about providing encouragement and support. This came up in our Facebook post as something around the idea, particularly when you're dealing with a difficult situation where you are somehow caretaking for someone else. Like we saw this in a couple of places, people caring for an aging parent, people caring for children, or people caring. Someone even posted about like a sick partner where they end up like the blurred lines between partner and caretaker.
Right.
And just the idea that they're carrying a very a sustained load on them. And so what can you do to provide support when they're giving all of their support to someone else? So like the support they need is almost replenishment of the support they're giving. And so what can you do if they're, you know, going over and taking care of, you know, like again, cooking for an aging parent, going over there every night and cooking dinner is being able to come home and know that you've cooked dinner. Some of those kinds of things.
Yeah. And also to talk about it because, you know, you don't want people becoming resentful, right?
Right.
And it begs the question of what do you take on when you become a partner? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, really, what do you take on? I always look at the example of, you know, I have friends who are caring for elderly parents in their home, like they've brought the elderly parent into their home. It really changes the relationship between the married people, you know,
because
now you have like literally someone you're taking care of. Or if you're caretaking for your partner who's been injured or sick, that's very hard and it changes the relationship dynamic completely, you know?
Well, and even think about too, like those are caretaking for other people, but there's also some situations where your partner's in a long-term situation that is unhealthy, unhappy, something. So like think about you're dating someone or you're married to someone who has a job that they hate. It's a toxic workplace. They come home, they're overworked, they're stressed out all the time, and there's like no end to it.
Right.
And it changes the dynamics of your relationship because this person's grumpy, they're tired, they're stressed out. And so, you know, what can you do to provide that kind of ongoing support when you know that it's not an incident, like an incident that's just, you know, going to somehow go into the background. And, and like, I never forget
about that one time thing.
Yeah. It's like a one time thing, but like you just, you know,
you're saying when it's not a one time thing, like when it's a long term, they're in this awful job. Like I was recently.
And then what do? You want to provide support and say this job is awful, but their continued participation in an awful job without taking agency to, if they can, maybe find another job or say something and make it less awful or anything. They're just staying in it and it's affecting your relationship. At what point do you say something and say, this is impacting our relationship? Like your choice to be in this and me supporting you through this very toxic situation that is unending is impacting the way that we are, our dynamics and how we're getting along.
I think you need to say it right away so it doesn't fester. And if you are truly in a partnership, you need to say like, well, I'm here to support you. So if you need to quit that job and take several months to find a new job or whatever you need to do, financially I'm here, emotionally I'm here, because I think that's people's biggest fear of leaving a toxic situation is that they're going to be destitute, you know?
Right, exactly.
So you have to be supportive and actually like believe it. Not then undermine them, not say, okay, go ahead and quit. And then a week after they've left their job, be like, why don't you have another job? What are you doing? You
know? Right, exactly.
And I think from toxic jobs, especially to understand like, I've been off for a couple months now, like recovering from what, like I actually had physical symptoms, like stress that was happening to me that I hadn't experienced in years from going to that job. And so now I'm at the point where now I've had some time off, you know, at my own expense, of course, but like I'm feeling better. So now I'm actually feeling more ready to take on something else. And I'm not going to go for anything toxic. I'm not going to do it. Just won't do it. It's not worth it. And I think like a lot of people don't feel that they have the support of their partner to leave. Right.
Well,
but each should be that for each other.
Well, and some people don't have the financial means to leave, but what they do have, and potentially for many folks, is the ability to go do something else. Like I have heard people say, I'd rather go work at X for 1/10 of what I was being paid here than stay at Y. You know what I mean? And so, you know, getting up and maybe finding another job, you know, and I know, again, it's easier said than done for some people, but there is a price that you pay for not just your relationship, but your own health and well-being for staying in those toxic situations. So, you know, I have a lot of students that I teach at my university that have been in these jobs, and well, maybe the jobs themselves aren't toxic, but they aren't going anywhere, or they've reached the peak and they're now coming back in their, you know, 30s and 40s to get an undergraduate degree, and they're making things happen, and they have the support of their partners to say, okay, great, you are moving forward with your dreams and I'm going to support you. I know that you're going to have to take classes in the evenings because you're working all day because we can't afford for you to quit your job and go to school. I'm going to be there. I'm going to, you know, help with the, you know, I'm going to take care of the kids. I'll be the primary, you know, person in the home and do whatever, because I know that you are actively getting yourself out of a situation and I want to be supportive of that. It's just, it's when I've seen it where it doesn't work when someone has an unsupportive partner who is putting demands on them, you know, that it's like, well, you don't have enough time to go to school, so you just can't go to school. And that becomes tricky because you want your partner to be able to rise their potential, be their very best, be their happiest. And sometimes it means that we have to take a back seat or we have to double time. I mean, I've seen it where even someone says, like, I can't work and go to school at the same time, so I quit my job. And my partner took on a second job to help pay for things while I'm in school. Like, So sometimes it's that financial support, but think of the gesture of that. Like that partner right. says, I believe in you and your dreams so much that I'm going to financially caretake for this family as long as it takes for you to be able to realize your, you know, your potential. I mean, that in and of itself is very powerful.
Agree. If you can do that, if you can manage it. But if I you also can manage think, it. Right, that's not sustainable for the long term. So that has to be for a very short term thing, because then the other person, if they're working two jobs, they're giving up, you know, a lot of themselves, you know, but you could sit down and discuss, does it make sense taking out student loans or whatever for me to make this career change? But I think one should never, ever keep like be such a like so not accommodating or helpful that a person stays in some kind of awful situation, you know?
Right.
And everybody's awful situation is different. Everyone's tolerance for toxicity at work is different, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and it could be too that the partner doesn't see how toxic it is, no matter how much you talk about it, and they don't understand why you would leave such a good, like well-paying job. And this is, why would you leave that? And now we're in a financial crisis because you can't deal with like a coworker who's mean to you. And that's
see, that
difficult.
Goes back to like communication. Are you really communicating with your partner? Or are you not? Like you should already understand that. You know what I mean?
Well, and again, everybody has their own threshold. So some people can be like, oh, that person's mean. I don't care. I'm going to go to work. And another person is like, I just literally cannot. I have these panic attacks before I go into the workplace every single day, and I can't live like this. And it doesn't matter what your threshold is. It's your partner's threshold that matters.
Exactly.
And that's why
they're
miserable. You can't talk them out of being miserable just because you think you wouldn't be miserable in that situation.
Do people do that to other people?
I'm not like that either, or at least I don't think I am. I hope I'm not, but you know, kind of that suck it up. We all have to, you know, life is hard, you know, this shouldn't be a big deal, you know, but that.
Well, we should say life is hard. So therefore we shouldn't be in situations where we're miserable, and life is short and we only have so much limited time. So why don't, if we're in a partnership or relationship, why don't we work together to find happiness for both of us?
Exactly. Yeah.
And
I'm that team approach, right? We're going to work together, and I'm going to support you, but we're going to talk through this. And I think it goes back to this idea of listening, communication, validation, you know.
Right.
I mean,
well, that's
that
the thing. Like I said, I've been told before that I'm immature, right? Because I like to hike and snowboard and all that. And I wish it's up to me now to make the money to be able to go snowboarding more, right? Because I have to now leave Southern Arizona to do that. But if I want to live a life of hiking and snowboarding, there's nothing wrong with that. So someone just needs to be on the same page. And
exactly.
You know, if you want to be an academic or be a police officer or whatever, right, or whatever you want to do, like that's the thing, is I'm always supportive of the other person, and I don't require a ton of financial, you know, I don't need a ton of money to live. And so for me, like, freedom to be what I want to be and to be happy is much more important than any amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and it's important that your partner understands that, right?
Right.
Like, everybody's going to have their own preferences and their own expectations of the world around them, and they're going to have their own sense of disappointment, whether you think it's valid or not, and they're just going to have their own way of navigating life. And we just have to find people who are maybe in some senses they're like us, maybe in some senses they're not, but we understand and can appreciate them, because at the end of the day, it's, we're not living their life.
Right.
We're living alongside them in our lives. And so how do we show up and be the best that we can be? And I think this one, that this particular one about the do's, this, and we can, you know, kind of leave it on this note, because I think this is a really important one, is what a lot of people need is affirm that you're not going to leave. And it's hard to guarantee that. I get it. But, you know, for better or worse or whatever, but affirm that you won't leave, because some people are, you know, might be afraid of being vulnerable and sharing what's really hurting them, because they're afraid that their partner is going to get up and leave because it's either going to be too much, they don't want to hear it, they're not fixing it, and then they withhold from their partner, and it disconnects them because they don't tell them because they're worried about being judged and they're worried about being left. And so I think that's really important. So if they're struggling with something, just affirm, I'm here. I'm here for you.
Right. To be that supportive partner. But again, I think that comes down to, like, you don't necessarily have to go to therapy, but to use therapeutic principles, you know, in a relationship, and communication, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to listen to your partner? Are you going to be there for your partner? And if not, that's fine too, but then just be single. And there's nothing wrong with being single.
Right. Or if that's what the other partner wants and you just want to lead two simultaneous lives, go for it.
Right.
But I know for me, it's important to hear that, like, it doesn't matter how much you're struggling or how much you're balled up crying. I mean, there was a period of 9 months where I cried like almost every single day about my mom, and my partner never left. She said, cry as much as you need to cry and I'll be here for you. And
Right.
she would just put her arm around me and I would just cry. And I knew that the next day, if I cried, she wasn't going to be like, you've cried enough about this. Like,
Right.
can we move on? She never said that. She was just, I'm here for you. I'm here for you. I'm here for you. And that's, and she did, and she stayed through the whole thing. And that made me feel a sense of comfort and love, right? Just the affirmation. And I wasn't like really worried that if I cried one more time,
Right.
like she was going to get up and
Right.
go, but like a little piece of me just liked hearing and knowing that I'm here for you, whatever that means.
And that, okay, so that's, well, this can be a whole nother episode, but that's different than long-term issues, right? I mean, that's a situational thing. It's something unusual that occurred, a parent died, versus something that you're struggling with long, long-term, you know, depression or other
Right.
mental health stuff. And I think that that's a completely different discussion and very
Right.
hard. And, you know, each person has to live a fully realized life. And,
Yep.
you know, it wasn't taking away from your partner to be supportive through that. But when those things do start to affect the other person's life and their quality of happiness and all of that, that's a different story.
Well, yeah, absolutely. We're talking, you know, and that, you're right. It probably is another episode. It's this idea if how you have to show up or how you are, you know, showing up or needed to be in a relationship is so negatively affecting your own sense of self or your own health and well-being on like a long-term basis, then that isn't helpful, you know, like, so that was one of the, actually the other recommendations that people talked about is setting boundaries for yourself so you don't feel overwhelmed. And some people's
Right.
boundaries are very different than others, but being very clear and communicating those so you don't look like you're leaving that person. And you can
Right.
just, you know, it's okay to say like, I had a really hard day too today. Why don't
Right.
we, you know, like, I don't
That's
know.
such
I've
a
said this to
show.
people. I said, you know, I've said that to people. I've had a really difficult day today. I do not have the emotional capacity to talk about this tonight. Can we just do something that's a little bit mindless and just sit and hold hands?
Right.
Because I also want to be very clear about how I'm showing up. I don't want to show up if I'm not in a place to show up either. And it's not fair to them and it's not fair to me.
Right.
So
And
that's
no comparing of each other's like stuff. Like, well, yours is
exactly.
harder than mine, or mine's harder than yours, you know?
It's not
Like
a
it's hard.
competition. Yeah,
Right.
exactly.
But that's the thing. Life isn't a competition. Relationships shouldn't be. And I used to have a really terrible view of getting in a relationship and then feeling like I was with an enemy. You know, I went to a lot of therapy about that. And that's the thing is that if you're in a partnership, you should be supportive of each other, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Period. Done.
All right. Well, awesome, Tracy. Thanks again for the great conversation. I think we covered a lot of ground today, and hopefully all of you listeners out there got just some ideas about things that you may want to consider when you're supporting a partner or how you might want to ask for that help or support from your partner when you may need it. So
just communicate.
Communicate. Communicate.
Communicate, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Communicate.
All right. Well, for all of our listeners out there, make sure that you go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.